You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO at 100.5 FM.
When only a child, aged 15, Omar Khadr was shot and seriously wounded by U.S. Army Special Forces in Afghanistan. From that day, July 27, 2002, to today, he has been imprisoned continuously and subjected to torture for 11 years at Bagram and Guantanamo. Last September, Omar Khadr, who was born and had schooling in Canada, was transferred from Guantanamo to the Millhaven Maximum Security Prison in Kingston. Dennis Edney has devoted years of pro bono work defending Omar Khadr's human rights and trying to achieve his freedom. An expert in the rule of law, Dennis Edney was awarded the 2009 Human Rights Medal by the Lieutenant Governor of BC. Dennis Edney is going to be in Vancouver this coming Tuesday, April 16th, to speak on the case of Omar Khadr, and we reached him this morning at his home in Edmonton. Good morning, Dennis, and welcome to Vancouver Cooperative Radio.
Good morning. I love the music, by the way.
Yes, it's so appropriate, I think, for the story of Omar Khadr. During Omar Khadr's 11 years of imprisonment in Guantanamo, what role did the Canadian government play in either maintaining his imprisonment or trying to gain his release?
Well, essentially nothing. But what role did they play was they sent a message to the U.S. government that they were not the least bit interested in Omar Khadr. And as a result of that message, Omar Khadr was treated very differently than any other Western detainee that had been in Guantanamo Bay. Every Western detainee, adult detainee that was in Guantanamo Bay, was released at the behest of their own government and returned home. Canada made no effort to bring Omar Khadr home. In fact, in the early years of being in Guantanamo and my going there, one of my concerns was I couldn't even get the Canadian government to intercede with the Americans to provide prescription glasses for Omar to protect his one remaining good eye. It was as simple, it's as basic as that.
And were appeals made to the Canadian government? Did you do that in behalf of your advocacy for Omar Khadr's defense of his human rights?
Absolutely. I mean, I was quite naive when I took on the Omar Khadr case. I thought because of what Guantanamo stood for and its international criticism as a torture chamber, that when I wrote to the Canadian government, and by then we should be fair here, I've been talking at that time with the Liberal government at the time, I had received very few responses from the Liberal government. I was developing a kind of a pen pal relationship and going no further. And so I was shocked that my Canadian government would not be interested in protecting a young boy. And that didn't change. I guess what changed was the animosity that the Harper government showed to Omar Khadr. They simply were not interested and did everything in their power to keep Omar in Guantanamo Bay.
There were reports that the Canadian government itself sent representatives from intelligence agencies or other departments that, in a sense, facilitated the torture of Omar Khadr.
That's a very polite way of putting it. The Supreme Court of Canada ruled that the treatment of Omar in Guantanamo Bay by the Americans was a breach of the International Convention on Torture and the Geneva Conventions, and that Canada had been complicit in both his breach of Geneva Conventions and in his torture. And that is true that they sent, rather than going to help Omar, they had their officials from the Department of Foreign Affairs worked with the CIA in interrogating this young man, and prior to interrogating this young man, who was probably 17 at the time, 16 or 17 years of age. He had been in solitary confinement for almost 2 years, and in preparing him for being interrogated by both Canada and U.S., this young boy was subject to sleep deprivation. And that is, he would be wakened up every 3 hours and moved from cell to cell and back to cell for 3 weeks at a time. You know, the Supreme Court of Israel years ago described sleep deprivation as one of the most effective torture instruments you can use. And I recall speaking to one of the interrogators in Guantanamo Bay who stated that in a very excited manner that, you know, sleep deprivation really works. You find these guys, and he's talking about the detainees, speaking to themselves, trying to walk through walls, just totally hallucinating, and it's under those mental conditions that they're then taken into another room, questioned and interrogated, and their answers are relied upon. So I'm sure if you'd asked Omar Khadr had he shot John F. Kennedy, I'm sure he would have said yes.
Speaking of shooting, one of the allegations against Omar Khadr, something that led up to manipulation to get him to plea bargain to get out of Guantanamo and transferred to Canada, was that he killed an American soldier. Could you explain a little bit both about how that plea bargain was set up and also the account of the so-called murder of an American soldier by Omar Khadr?
It may be, we may not have time for both, but in terms of the plea bargain, what is it I say? I urged with great difficulty Omar Khadr to plead guilty. And Omar Khadr, for the record, he did not want to plead guilty. What he said to me was that by pleading guilty, people will then believe that he was a terrorist. And I said, and I had had concerns, real concerns, that there was no trial taking place for him, in the sense that no one had done any work for trial, no witnesses had been called. Witnesses had been called on his behalf. In fact, I thought the fix was in, and I argued that. As a lawyer, as a trial lawyer, when you're preparing for a trial, usually your office is busy and messy and everybody's excited. When I arrived in Guantanamo, everybody was at the beach, essentially. And so there was a possibility of getting a deal. The Americans wanted rid of Omar Khadr, and Canada didn't want him back. And so I persuaded Omar Khadr to take 8 years, because what I said to him was, assuredly, you will spend the rest of your life in Guantanamo. And that has been borne out by the fact that the Obama administration has now codified much of the rules that George Bush had put in place, including indefinite detention being a legal principle. And so Omar did not want to plead guilty, but he did, and he's now out of that hellhole. Having said that, Omar Khadr was accused of, and he pled guilty to, killing a soldier, Christopher Speer, who was a Delta Force officer. What happened was groups of American soldiers were going from compound to compound in Afghanistan, from village to village, and they came to this house that Omar Khadr was in. Omar Khadr was in a house with other with Taliban individuals that his father had placed him there, telling him he would be coming back to pick him up. Omar was 15 at the time, and in that culture, Omar had no choice but to listen to his father, and certainly had no choice to challenge these serious men in the house he was left in. Omar Khadr was left in harm's way, essentially, by his father, and then continued in harm's way with these officers, and then his harm continued after that, because the Americans attacked the house, they blew it up, they killed everybody there, And one of the Delta Force officers giving evidence at trial talked about going into the alleyway where Omar Khadr was in this compound and how he had killed three adults. And he noticed Omar Khadr, who was had his back to the alley, who was his face against a wall and screaming because he had been he'd suffered greatly from the bombing and the all kinds of injuries. And so he shot him in the back. And then he said, his evidence was, that on his way out of the alleyway, a hand grenade came over. He didn't see the hand grenade, but he heard it. So there was never any direct evidence Omar Khadr threw a hand grenade, one. And two, there was, it's highly unlikely with two huge bullet holes in his back that he was able to do so. But that's what he pled guilty to.
Given all the torment Omar Khadr has suffered since he was shot, imprisoned, manipulated, tortured, how would you characterize his own psychological health?
Well, until very recently, I would have said I've never met anybody who has suffered so much and been abandoned by so many and yet has such strong sense of humanity. I mean, but he's now in Millhaven Prison, and he hasn't looked well since he's come to Canada.
Well, we'll look forward to your visit to Vancouver on this coming Tuesday, where the discussion, I'm sure, will go further into what can be done to overcome the obstacles to convincing a broad number of Canadians that Omar Khadr deserves his freedom. Thanks, Dennis.
Take care.
This podcast was produced by the Red Eye Collective in Vancouver, BC. If you live in the Vancouver area and are interested in creating alternative radio with us, we'd love to hear from you. Contact us at redeye@coopradio.org.